How did Lewis understand and relate to women before his conversion to Christ versus after his conversion?
You're listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, the creator and host of the show. My guest today appears on the program for the first time, but she is by no means a new writer. Carolyn Curtis is an award-winning veteran journalist. She is here today as the co-editor of Women and C.S. Lewis, a project she worked on with Dr. Mary Pomeroy Key. This is a new book for 2015. Welcome to All About Jack, Carolyn.
Thank you very much.
Well, now, I'll have you provide more about yourself a little bit later. So let's begin instead by having you give an overview of Women and C.S. Lewis. What's this book all about?
The full title of the book is Women and C.S. Lewis, What His Life and Literature Reveal for Today's Culture. It's already out in the United Kingdom, and it will be out in the U.S. in the next week or two. Of course, it's already available for pre-order. I partnered on it, as you mentioned, with Dr. Mary Pomeroy Key, who is with the C.S. Lewis Foundation, which was founded by its president, Dr. Stan Matson. Mary is director of the C.S. Lewis Study Center in Northfield, Massachusetts, and that's a property owned by the C.S. Lewis Foundation, in addition, of course, to Lewis's home in Oxford, England, which, as all your listeners know, William, is called the Kilns. Later, I'll go into the book's premise and the background on why I think the book is important, but for now, I'll just describe it as a product in what I like to call the marketplace of ideas. Women and C.S. Lewis is a compilation book, meaning it has chapters by nearly 30 authors. The book's voice is what's called popular rather than scholarly, and although we think it will be a great resource to people in the academic world, we really expect the majority of readers to be just plain fans of C.S. Lewis. People who were, you know, raised on Narnia or who read Narnia to their children, people who love Lewis's science fiction, or people who just love the simple way that Lewis described the walk of faith. Just regular fans, regular people.
With a title like Women and C.S. Lewis, is this book just for women, or why should men be interested in it?
That's a great question, William. It probably does sound like a book for women readers, but actually we expect a huge population of male readers, and I'll see if I can explain why. I think I'll use Eric Metaxas as an example. Our publishing house used his endorsement on the cover of the book, and it goes like this. Thanks, someone needed to write this book. So why would Eric Metaxas say that about women and C.S. Lewis? I think I know the reason, William, and I'll see if I can articulate it. It's because, ultimately, this book is about the biblical standard, the biblical model of manhood, as expressed in the life and literature of the man named C.S. Lewis. So how Lewis related to women does matter. How Lewis portrayed girls and women in his novels does matter. What Lewis wrote and said about male-female relationships on so many levels does matter. And that's, of course, because men look to Lewis as a role model. Men see Lewis as, you know, wise and witty and deep and engaging on just so many aspects of life. And both men and women see Lewis as an example of a person of either gender who is greatly changed by God and greatly used by God. So, a very legitimate question becomes, how did Lewis understand and relate to women before his conversion to Christ versus after his conversion? And the real heart of that question is this: how does God change and mold and develop a boy who was, frankly, a little bit of a prig at some points in his life? And other descriptions I'll try to tastefully leave out, into a man, and by that I really specifically mean a male adult. What values does God develop into such a male adult who he wants to use as mightily as he used Lewis? And how do those values play out in that man's relationships and also in his life's work? Then to add another level of interest to the male audience, let's consider couple of other things here. Lewis literally had been in the trenches of one of the most brutal wars ever fought. Lewis was educated in an all-male environment. Lewis was incredibly brainy, lucky guy. And Lewis clung to atheism, resisting God for what just seems like the longest. Now, some of those facts may seem a little, you know, odd, I guess you'd call it, to today's men. I mean, by odd, I mean just kind of strange and unusual. And yet, really, are they? I mean, for example, let me just throw a couple of things out. Think of how much the issue of gender is involved in 21st century wars. And I mean actual wars on battlefields in parts of the world where people of different beliefs are really at odds with each other, in addition to the, you know, culture wars going on in our country and other nations. For example, I mean, we're living in an age when a recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize is a school-age girl who was shot just for wanting an education. So do we see the connections here? And if we do, we need to ask ourselves, are Lewis's time and place and circumstance really so very different from our own? So my point to the male listeners is this. Despite what seems to this generation like the changing definition of gender, gender really does matter. It matters to all of us, male and female alike. And how it mattered to C.S. Lewis should really be of interest to both women and men. In fact, Mary and I went to a lot of trouble to ensure we had gender parity among our contributing authors. I think we have about as many men who wrote chapters as we do women.
Well, now, Carolyn, even though you mentioned the answer to this basic question here, I wonder if you could maybe emphasize it a little bit more in terms of your target audience. It's not aimed mostly at scholars, you said, but go ahead and can you elaborate more on that?
Sure, that's a great question. Our publisher, Lyon Hudson in Oxford, England, agrees with us that the book will appeal to fans of C.S. Lewis as well as to scholars, of course, even though we have a number of scholars who contributed to the book, people like Alistair McGrath and Monica Hilder and Randy Alcorn and a couple of dozen of other names that I know will be very familiar to your listeners, William. I have to remind you again that they wrote in what's called the popular voice rather than the academic voice. So the writing is just very accessible. It's very much what, you know, today's busy readers demand. And then here's another audience for women in C.S. Lewis that may surprise your listeners. It's the newer generation of Lewis readers. In fact, because of the subject matter that makes this book so unique, we specifically invited certain contributors. And let me just give you a couple of quick examples. Brett McCracken and Casey Macenti. If readers have not discovered Brett McCracken yet, they will meet him in this book. And they really should know him because he's on the blog Mere Orthodoxy, and he's in the Wall Street Journal, and he's in Christianity Today. And gosh, he's the author of books such as Hipster Christianity and others. And but he writes in our book to what he calls the 20-something crowd about why his generation is longing for C.S. Lewis. And William, that's actually the term he uses, longing. It's just a really compelling chapter. Another favorite is written by an Oregon woman named Casey Macenti, who works in management in the wireless industry. She imagines Lewis and Dorothy L. Sayers sitting down for a pint of beer and their trademark witty conversation. It's just a really provocative chapter, but it's just also a lot of fun. In fact, Lewis's friendship with Dorothy L. Sayers is so interesting that we have two chapters on that subject, the second one written by Crystal Downing. I have to give credit here to my writing partner, Mary Key, for one of the reasons we invited so many younger, up-and-coming writers. Mary reminded me that the C.S. Lewis Foundation works really hard to carry on the legacy of C.S. Lewis by supporting newer thinkers and by encouraging newer thinkers. They do it by giving them voice, which was one of the traits of Lewis himself. That's what he did. And we see that some in, for example, the way he encouraged women in particular in the Socratic Club. So we did the same. I should also mention that our book includes photos of all the contributors and biographical material about them. In other words, we wanted to introduce our readers who are newer to Lewis's books to many of the people who are recognized authorities on Lewis, even though in our book they are not necessarily using their more scholarly voices. A lot of our endorsers, and we have four very full pages of endorsements, mention how comfortable the writing is in the book, what we call the voice. Let me just read to you what Marge Mead of the Wade Center wrote. This is her quote. "Not all contributors agree, but all take seriously the significance of gender to the world, and we should as well."
Now, you were noting in the part of your explanation there about some unique aspects. That's actually the question I'm going to be asking here next, and that is, what are other unique factors regarding the book Women and C.S. Lewis?
The first factor, as you're calling it, may come as a huge shock, so fasten your seatbelt. A number of really well-known critics have said some very unflattering things about C.S. Lewis, calling him a sexist and a misogynist. Apparently, they've been trying to discredit and marginalize Lewis among today's generation of readers. In fact, one of the reasons I wanted to write this book was to find out if these very harsh charges are a form of Christian bashing, which, as many of your listeners will agree, is epidemic today. And before you even ask me this, yes, we named the names of these people who claim C.S. Lewis was a sexist and a misogynist. And yes, the book thoroughly explores these very shocking charges. And yes, we address some of the more difficult to understand aspects of Lewis's life and writings as they relate to women, such as his rather puzzling relationship with Mrs. Moore and his commentary on women in church leadership and many other issues, including, believe it or not, Lewis's views on sex. My point is that we are exploring as many sides as we can of this man who has just been such an enormous influence in the 20th century and the 21st century, and whose books just continue to sell and sell and sell. So, how did Lewis treat women in his life on a personal level? How did he interact with these women? We think we go a bit deeper into these questions than other books have explored. For example, we've known for years that Lewis was devastated by the loss of his mother, but we did some extra research and discovered aspects of the personality of Lewis's father and the relationship between his mother and father that sort of flesh out his parenting a bit more than other books have gone. Here's another question. Why did he remain a bachelor for so long? Why did he fall in love with Joy Davidman? Why did he not marry several other women he took an interest in? And frankly, why did those relationships fail? And then, of course, how did he treat girls and women in his literature? We have a whole section on that question with several chapters. And of course, we ask, and I think we answer, what do Lewis's overall views about women look like in today's culture, in today's social environment? Again, we have a whole section exploring that.
Well, now, we've been talking quite a bit about the content of the book, but we haven't necessarily examined or explored how it's organized. So let me just ask you outright, how is the book organized?
Well, here's what we did. We took the subject of Lewis and women, and we sort of sliced it and diced it in just all sorts of ways. Then we organized it into five sections. And the first section focuses on Lewis's relationship with some of the key women in his life. For example, Crystal Hurd writes on his mother. Crystal was the one I referred to earlier, who was enterprising enough to uncover some new information about Lewis's father that helps us to see a little better picture of Lewis's parents as a married couple. Paul McCusker sheds new light on Lewis's controversial relationship with Mrs. Moore. He brings some aspects of their living arrangement into a focus that, frankly, I've just never read anywhere else. Other chapters in that section focus on Lewis's relationships, including one by Alistair McGrath, who explains why the Inklings did not include women and whether that arrangement really reflected Lewis's views. We have chapters on his relationships with a number of women. Obviously, we devote a lot of space to his romance and marriage to Joy Davidman. Don King addresses the question of why Lewis apparently didn't fall in love with Ruth Pitter. We even have a chapter by Colin Duryea that summarizes Lewis's many friendships with women and how those friendships seem to have impacted Lewis. I kind of laughingly say that Colin gets the award for the best chapter title. He called it C.S. Lewis and the Friends Who Apparently Couldn't Really Have Been His Friends but Actually Were. Of course, that's a play on the idea that a misogynist would not go out and make friends with women, but Lewis did, and quite a few women. The second section explores Lewis's fiction, beginning with Devin Brown's very detailed chapter on Narnia, then moves on to a chapter about Lewis's science fiction by Steve Elmore, plus chapters on other novels by some contributors such as Joy Jordan Lake, David C. Downing, and Andrew Lazo. We have a really nicely done section on Lewis's poetry featuring Malcolm Guite, Brad Davis, and Kelly Belmont. I should mention that each section begins with some introductory material because we don't want to presume that all our readers, or even that many of our readers, are, you know, experts on Lewis. So we give them a lot more background information in the material between the sections. After the poetry section, we go into a section on how Lewis's life and literature impact the 21st century discussion about women, in fact, just the whole subject of gender. Monica Hilder is the writer who opens that section, and it's with just a stunning chapter. She absolutely turns upside down the paradigm of gender in literature. It's just fascinating. And that section just covers a lot of subjects, William. For example, two chapters are devoted to Lewis's arguments about women in the pulpit. One is written by Jeanette Sears, who was one of the first women ever to be ordained as a priest in the Church of England. And the other is by Kathy Keller, who corresponded with Lewis as a child. Kathy Keller is a book author in her own right, and she's also the wife of Tim Keller, and together they planted Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Manhattan.
Well, now, earlier we promised to learn more about you. I'm aware, Carolyn, that you have awards from the Wall Street Journal, the Society of Professional Journalists, the Evangelical Press Association, and you've written for a lot of publications ranging from Christianity Today to the Saturday Evening Post to Sports Illustrated. But can you tell us more specifically about your professional background and what led you to write this book?
Well, as you've guessed, I am first and foremost a journalist. Both of my university degrees are in journalism. I've worked in a lot of interesting places, I think. They range from Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., to communications management in three Fortune 50 companies, to communications management in two of America's most influential church denominations. Women and C.S. Lewis is my seventh book. The idea for it came to me about 10 years ago when I was spending a week at the Kilns. I heard a conversation about the charges against Lewis, you know, critics calling him sexist and a misogynist. And I have to say that hearing that sort of shook my world because my career exposed me to a certain amount of sexism. And frankly, I just never read anything in Lewis that particularly struck me as sexist. So, as you probably know, journalists are culture watchers, and even 10 years ago, I was noticing the trend toward bashing Christians, which, of course, has been going on for years, and I began to wonder if these charges against Lewis were just a form of that. So, you know, I wanted to look into it. Maybe it was going to turn out to be based on truth. I didn't know, but I decided to look into it, and what I learned seemed to be worthy of a book. I'm really glad my literary agent, Steve Lobby, agreed, and so did Lyon Hudson, our publishing house.
Well, many of the contributors to the book, and time doesn't permit for you to name all of them. You've already named some of them. But I'm going to give you the flexibility either way of picking any two or three to describe some more information about what's addressed in the book.
William, you keep throwing me these Sophie's Choice kinds of questions. But, okay, let's try this. We even explore what Lewis had to say about sex, or as one of our writers, Holly Ordway, called it, that thing people do between the sheets, which gave me just a huge chuckle. Holly and Michael Ward and Mary Poplin and several others write on aspects of Lewis's views on sex. And I think readers of Women and C.S. Lewis will be surprised to find out how relevant his views still are. One person I quote in the concluding chapter even says his views shed helpful light on the same-sex marriage issue of today, which, of course, really surprised me. That person is Carol Swain, by the way.
Well, there is obviously a lot more to your book. It is a nice, good, thick book that we could talk about. But let's focus in on the final section, which is called Lewis the Mentor, How His Views on Women Impact Mine. And this comes right before your concluding chapter. So tell us about that.
Okay. The first of the three writers for this section is Randy Alcorn, who, as your listeners know, is a prolific and very respected author with just many, many awards to his credit. I'll just quickly read you a sentence from Randy Alcorn's chapter, which tells how Lewis inspires him to speak out for women. This is the point Randy Alcorn makes. Lewis called himself a dinosaur, but in many ways, in the deeply respectful tone in which he speaks out about women, he seems more ahead of his time than behind it. And, of course, Randy goes on to flesh that out with his chapter. Another contributor to this section is John Stonestreet, who shares the microphone with Eric Metaxas for Breakpoint, which is the Christian Worldview radio program founded by the late Chuck Colson. John Stonestreet is a well-established book author in his own right, and in our book, he writes how the weight of glory helps him to raise his three daughters. The third contributor to the Lewis as a Mentor section is Kristen Ditchfield, who is the best-selling author of a book entitled A Family Guide to Narnia. That book has sold more than 55,000 copies, and it's been translated into just a number of languages. Kristen is the author of more than 60 other books, including a curriculum guide which introduces thousands of elementary school children to the world of Narnia. She writes on what Narnia teaches about being strong, courageous women in our book. And I'll just add that her chapter dovetails very nicely with the chapter in an earlier section by Devin Brown. And Devin does a great job of systematically refuting one by one the sexism claims about Narnia made by these people who just seem to me are intent on discrediting Lewis and casting doubt on him as a thinker who can be, you know, trusted with people's children, which is kind of important to parents. Then back to Kristen, I'll just add that her chapter is the last one before a conclusion, which I wrote, that wraps up the book. Mary and I both wrote introductions to the book, by the way, to kind of help set it up. And then I brought it in for a landing with this conclusion. The conclusion summarizes the findings, and it also introduces readers to several people who honor Lewis's influence on them with their own real-life experiences. And the five people help to demonstrate Lewis's relevance and impact well into the 21st century. The ones I chose to highlight in the conclusion are making a significant difference in the world today. They are people who, you know, see and recognize the lostness in our culture, and they understand the power of words and actions and truths to influence change. They also happen to be people who recognize that issues affecting women affect men also, which, as I've mentioned, is a key message that Mary and I wanted to emphasize in this book. I'll just go ahead and name those five people here, William. They are Dr. Carol M. Swain, Randy Singer, Lancia E. Smith, David Holland, and Lisa Ledry Aguilar.
Well, there are obviously a lot of different things that we've just been talking about or you've been sharing. But if you could, you know, focus in on, like, what are the key points do you want readers to take away from Women in C.S. Lewis?
Wow, that's another great question. Now, I can think of many points, William, but I'll just mention three. First, I encourage readers to accept that Lewis was human and complex. I mean, you know, like everyone, he was flawed. He was imperfect. However, Lewis changed and he grew in wisdom as he submitted himself, kicking and screaming, I think is the way he described it, from disbelief in God to a full life of faith and submission to God's will. And after that, Lewis found joy in every sense of how he used that word. And of course, that joy is available to all of us who seek Christ and serve him. Second, I think any look at C.S. Lewis's life and work is really an examination of God's faithfulness. That trajectory, as I like to call it, of Lewis's life and his work is really God's story at work in any of us, if we will allow it. And third, as I mentioned, Lewis's view of women is relevant in today's news environment. I mean, gender is at the heart of issues ranging from government legislation to literal battlefields. So I hope readers of Women in C.S. Lewis will dig more into what Lewis himself said, and I also hope readers of Women in C.S. Lewis will depend more on Lewis's source for truth, which is God's Word, the Bible.
Well, in closing, Carolyn, you know, we've covered a lot of ground, and I encourage people to take the time to consider getting Women in C.S. Lewis. I've had the privilege of getting a copy ahead of time and have looked over different parts of it. But tell us where listeners can get it, maybe online, and why they should consider getting a copy.
Oh, sure, William. Thank you. My website is carolyncurtis.net. And I would love to hear from readers, especially whether the book persuaded them either way about the charges against Lewis made by these critics. If listeners visit carolyncurtis.net, they will find several links to sources for purchasing the book. Those links are on my homepage. And I hope they will enjoy the book and be informed and blessed by it. If they will go to the Contact Me page, they will find a form they can fill out to, you know, send me any feedback or ask me any questions. And William, I just want to add to this that I really enjoyed being on your podcast. Like so many other people, I'm grateful to you for all you do to promote Lewis and the authors who bring resources like Women in C.S. Lewis to the marketplace of ideas. You have a wonderful forum, and I'm just really happy and honored to be a part of it.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Carolyn, and I appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, William. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks also goes to you, our listener, for being interested enough to hear this show. All About Jack is a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, the producer and host of this podcast. Be sure to visit my site to hear other programs as well to see the show notes for this episode. I have a direct link to Carolyn's website there. Plus, she was actually part of a shorter panel discussion a few months ago, and there will be an easy link to follow to listen to it. Regarding the release date of Women in C.S. Lewis, you can buy it now in the UK, as she mentioned, and the official release date in the US is August 1st. But it's possible that besides being able to pre-order now, the book may ship before this, as the Kindle version is currently available. You can find the show notes by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. The Podbean location is where the audio for each episode is hosted, and browsing previous programs there is probably a little easier. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. At EssentialCSLewis.com, you can still get this podcast. Plus, I have a variety of articles there as well, including a daily fact, quote, and quiz about C.S. Lewis. I hope you enjoyed today's show enough to want to share it. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online at EssentialCSLewis.com or at AllAboutJack.podbean.com. As noted, either place is where you can find the other programs. Recent shows include a chat with Dr. Devin Brown about the Eric Metaxas-hosted video discussing Mere Christianity that also has a study guide Dr. Brown wrote. Then at the end of June, I released a special interview with Dr. Don King about two books related to Joy Davidman he was involved with. Older shows include a recording of a talk I gave about the various occasions Lewis preached a sermon, and an interview with Dr. Holly Ordway about her journey from atheism to Christianity in a book entitled Not God's Type. Again, you can hear those and others by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, that's info@EssentialCSLewis.com.